Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back
to the Who is Satoshi podcast.
Who is he?
We'll get to that on episode 1000, guys. Today, we're going to make a prediction for everyone about what our future looks like. You've got two different camps on this. You've got the revolutionaries who think that Bitcoin is going to be a revolution and essentially overthrow all the powers that be and replace them with this beautiful utopian Bitcoin era. And then I think you've got the other camp who thinks it's going to be a little bit more low-key than that, that the other side of the aisle, the legacy systems are going to capitulate and integrate Bitcoin into their system, their legacy system, and adopt it. And it's not going to be this, it's still a, I don't want to use the word revolution. It's still a massive change and adoption of Bitcoin and all this, but it's not quite the revolutionary destruction and then rebirth of something new that so many people talk about, right? And if we want to say, I think the biggest advocate for the adoption and integration camp is one of them is Michael Saylor. Pretty sure he said we need to stop talking about it, about Bitcoin as this state ending money and this revolution and whatever else we say about it, and discuss it as a way to store value and just another asset in our world.
Sure.
I guess if we want to start with first question, I mean, what camp are we in? What do we think is going to happen? And have you changed your mind, right? Did you think one thing a few years ago, and now that you've seen progress, you've changed your view on it? Or where are we at? What are your thoughts?
It's a tough question. Probably the most important question for my future in the next 10 to 20 years, because if it breaks one way, we should be acting very differently than if it breaks the other way, right? And the extremes being, it's basically the brittleness of the response to Bitcoin, right? Is there a brittle response that fights it, that persecutes Bitcoin, that tries to shut it down, that tries to fight it? I think we both agree that it will win in the end, but to what degree will there be an attack on it? I think that it'll be pretty intense and violent.
I think that's the belief you've held for a while too, right? Because we've discussed this idea, I think when we started, you know, 100 episodes ago, at some point along the way, we've discussed how we think it's going to look before hyper-Bitcoinization. And I'm almost certain that's the same. So you've pretty much had that thought and it's remained a constant.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, to clarify that a bit, I don't think that there's going to be like a giant Bitcoin army marching and a giant anti-Bitcoin army marching. And the Bitcoin army has like wears orange and has like a big B symbol, and the anti-Bitcoin one, you know, as green and has a dollar symbol. I think whenever you read in history about like these major fractures, right, major conflicts, there's normally a lot of deeper threads to the conflict, and we normally just focus on it from like first shots fired all the way to like armistice signed. World War One, for example, everybody brings up Ferdinand, he gets shot, bada bing, bada boom, millions of people die, Treaty of Versailles signed in Paris, or whatever, or Versailles, it's in the name. And but like there's got to be financial factors, economic factors that were like huge pieces to what sparked that conflict, right? I just don't think you can take the rug out from the regime like this and have them not have a pretty fanatical response. I guess what I'm saying with the historical example is when something actually happens that might involve this, like let's say Germany breaks from the EU or something like that, right? Maybe Bitcoin will be a huge factor, especially in the higher ranks and people that know kind of what's going on and people that don't want to be using the euro and so on and so forth. It might not be the poster child of the whole movement, right? Like the whole movement might be, hey, we want to free Germany because we've been carrying around the weight of Italy and Spain and all these other countries that like to work 4 hours a day. Maybe that's the rallying cry, right? But in the background, Bitcoin is actually a huge factor in the calculus of that action.
I think another point you bring up, dude, is essentially if you have a massive shift in power, it's not going to happen. It's not just going to be a quiet shift, right? The people in power are not going to quietly allow themselves to lose all their power, or not even just lose it, but have it be transferred to someone else. In this case, I would say to individuals through Bitcoin. I think that was one of the points you made, and I think I would agree with it.
Even if the money adoption goes completely smoothly, now you've completely shifted the power as far as who has the money, right?
As far as who has the money, you've shifted the power because these people realize they can't just print money. We can go on and on. We've talked about it for more than 100 episodes. Printing money is theft of power from every single human being that's not able to print money. So that is a massive amount of power. And there's a threat to it now. So yeah, those people are going to be very angry. And they're not going to just allow it to be taken from them, I don't think. That's just not how it works. There's a power shift. There's a fight for the power. And yeah, I think, like you said, we both know Bitcoin wins in the end. I think it might get pretty bad too. I guess I was second guessing my initial assumption. So if you ask me, I think, yeah, I'm more on the revolution side of the things. I think society is going to go through massive and rapid like changes. Civilization, maybe it'll become uncivilized. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like. I think it's going to be pretty drastic. The thing that makes me second guess that a little bit is the ETFs getting pushed through and maybe no one caring. I mean, you got Elizabeth Warren screaming about it. You got Jamie Dimon saying he would outlaw it. But I mean, nothing's happened. The ETFs are approved and it's pretty low key as far as that goes. I mean, it's implemented. The bigger it gets, the more adopted it becomes through ETFs even. It's harder to fight. It's harder and harder to fight at every advanced stage.
Is it? Or is more Bitcoin now
centralized,
easily confiscatable by the regime which stands to lose the most from Bitcoin?
Dude, I don't know if they could get away with confiscating people's Bitcoin. And the more people that have it, I don't think they could get away with it. It would start a war.
They got that away with confiscating gold.
I know, but the internet wasn't around during that period. A lot has changed, dude, since they confiscated the gold. And people were pissed about the gold confiscation, but they weren't able to talk to other people that had their gold confiscated. Maybe they talked to their neighbor or two people. With the internet, everything gets blasted out and the whole world knows instantly. I don't know if people are more or less... The people that own gold nowadays, I don't know if they're more or less obedient or would be willing to trade in their gold, trade in their Bitcoin, have it stolen from them. I don't know. The people that own it, I feel, are not the obedient ones, right? I certainly think there's a massive portion of the population that is obedient and will do whatever the government tells them to do. But those are the same people that aren't buying Bitcoin. So we might as well not talk about them.
Yeah, it's strange because when I think of the gold confiscation generation or whatever, I think A, they were way more trusting of the government, but also B, in some ways, I felt like they would be more likely to rebel against something like that.
Well, the other thing we don't know is how many people kept their gold illegally. You know what I mean?
Yeah, surely.
Probably Southerners, anyone in the country.
Yeah.
Countryside. Yeah, they kept it. If you're in the city and someone's going to rat on you or something, I don't know. And yeah, I feel like there was a lot more national pride back then. Like, oh, we have a duty to do this. You know, we have to bail out our country. That kind of sentiment, the patriotic, do your duty for your country sentiment.
Yeah, it's almost like they had built like a community that they could trust each other in or something like that. And yeah. The following like 80 years, it's almost like all of that has kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
Almost like that.
Dude, when it comes to the United States, I think the most likely thing is a fracturing of the union, if we still want to call it that. I think the states are just going to go their own way, and some of them are going to become, I don't know, I think they're going to go their own way and separate from one another, or at least from the federal government. I don't know if they'll form other nations of, you know, okay, these southern states are going to get together and form a United Southern States or something like that.
Yeah.
I definitely think there's going to be fracturing of the U.S.,
It's weird. For some reason, the assumption in a lot of Bitcoin circles is like this is ground zero for Bitcoin and therefore, or it seems like it's ground zero for Bitcoin and therefore, like whatever's happening, whatever shifts are happening because of this will impact the US the hardest. I don't know. I think I can see a very gradual, just melting of Bitcoin into America. When you think about it, it's so much more compatible, like the foundational beliefs of America with Bitcoin than any other nation, essentially, just from the freedom and decentralization aspects of it. So I really think it's like a natural fit for America. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think it'll hit worse than other areas. I think Germany is a prime contender for one of the biggest impacts. I think essentially Germany will be liberated from being under the EU for all this time. I also think, ironically, Japan, it will change a lot in Japan because it seems like they're one of the other countries that produces a lot of things, has a good economy, has a great workforce and all that, and gets underpaid for it, essentially, when you think about like the global fiat system.
Did you know that priced in the Japanese yen. Bitcoin's at an all-time high.
Wow, that's nice.
Well, it's crazy because, you know, I see the charts of, oh, you know, in Zimbabwe dollars, Bitcoin's at an all-time high. Or in, you know, the Argentine or the Venezuelan dollar, peso, whatever it is, Bitcoin's at an all-time high. And it's like, okay, great. You know, do we really care about these countries? Is it saying anything? We know that those places are, you know, not doing well and their currency is crap. We know that. Dude, Japan, Bitcoin's at an all-time high in the Japanese currency. That's a big signal.
That is a big signal.
They have, on average, the highest IQ of any country.
That amplifies the signal.
Yeah, it's a signal amplifier. I think that the U.S. is going to be hit hard, not because it doesn't match with our ideals. Bitcoin does perfectly align with the American fundamental values ideals of the founding fathers, at least. Point number one, I think we've strayed really far from those values. At least our government has. And I think there's citizens out there that still hold them. But if you hold those fundamental American values, I think you're considered an extremist almost. Or you could just say conservative. But even a lot of the conservative values, you talk to your average conservative, I don't know what they would say about taxation. I don't know. They would say,
they hate Putin and think that he's starting a world war.
Right. So, yeah, I think you're an extremist if you hold like fundamental American values and principles. That's what you'd be labeled as. So I think there's going to be fracturing because of that. I think America's going to be hit hard because we benefit the most from the money right now. We are at the top of the Ponzi scheme. The U.S. is the reserve currency for now, but not for long. And when that crashes, half the jobs in America are going to disappear. You talk about how much money comes from the government and pays for people, not just federal employees, not just state employees, county employees, city, all of the contractors, all of the defense contracting, all of the... It's too much money. And they'll print it. That's the solution, right? Oh, well, we're not collecting enough in taxes anymore. Okay, no problem. We'll go further into debt to pay for our budget. We'll just run a bigger deficit. Okay, that's going to devalue the dollar more. And this cycle will continue to get worse. And so sure, we can say, oh, these, you know, 50% of the U.S. population, yeah, they're still employed. Their pay has gone up. But dude, the money is worthless. The money will become worthless in America. And that is something that Americans can't fathom, dude. I really don't think they can. And I think that it's a certainty that it will happen. $34 trillion in debt. Dude, it's a certainty. In my eyes, it's a certainty that that will happen. When will it happen? I don't know. If I had to throw out a time frame as early as a decade, dude, it's not going to be more than 2 decades. It's not going to be more than 2 decades. Dude.
Yeah, but when Japan is devaluing faster, then it looks like the dollar's still good. I think it's much more vertically impactful than like country-wise impact. Meaning, I think the current fiat regime strongly benefits people that are politically connected, the second reason, they have a ton of assets relative to like their family or worth or whatever. They just have a ton of assets. Right.
Yeah.
And I actually think when Bitcoin takes over, it's going to be an enormous healing force for like the American economy. You think about 50, 60% of our economy being government spending, and who knows how much economy is driven from that 50 or 60%. Okay. Maybe another 10 or 20 just delivering sandwiches to the guys that are working for the government. But we've lost all of our manufacture. Like the Great Lakes used to be an industrial center of the world. Gone. Ghost town now, right? The only thing we do right now is computers, period, software. And I think all of that will come back like rapidly. I think it will shock people after Bitcoin adoption how quickly things heal.
I think things will heal. I don't know, dude. I'm torn on it. And this is why I think we're going to have states fracture. Some states are going to be they're going to be FUBAR.
Who?
I'm talking about the liberal states, right? The liberal states that need the government money, that are swimming in the government money, and that are throwing the government money around are going to suffer. Dude, states like the good old southern states, Texas, Florida, I mean, half the Midwest states, we know them, they're going to be fine because they don't rely on massive government funding. And so they're not going to be hit. They're not going to be hit by this. They'll be hit a little bit. But I think if we want to sit here and say, okay, 50% of our economy or 50% of our employees are, you know, paid by the government in some form or another. And then, like you said, another 10 or 20% are delivering them food and stuff. What states are we talking, right? Do we think that it's an even distribution, that there's an equal number of government employees in Wyoming as there are in Virginia or Maryland? Hell no. Hell no. The majority of certain states are holding like probably 70% or more within their state. What happens when that goes under? And then we're going to be in the same situation that Germany's in now with the EU. Are the competent states going to bail out the failing states? Or are we going to say like, no, you were irresponsible. You spent irresponsible fake money. Just no, you're not going to drag us down to the depths of hell with you. I don't know.
I mean, the person that's unhappy in the marriage is the red team, right? Like, they're the ones that prefer to... I mean, there's not a petition that's signed in Texas every year for all the communists to leave, you know, and create a commune, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
That same population would be very uncomfortable with giving up cities or states. I think the balance of power will shift. Then it becomes a matter of all of these cities, all of these areas that are losing power. What can they really do? What can Baltimore or Philadelphia or even like the DC Metro do as they're losing 10% wealth per year and everybody else is gaining 10% wealth?
Mobilize, they can make laws.
Mobilize all the shrinks and intelligence apparatus to go take Bitcoin?
They could make federal laws where... I don't know what they could do. They're going to try and make laws that the other states are going to disagree with. They're going to pass federal legislation to save those states. That's what they're going to do. And that means they're going to redistribute wealth from the states that are doing well and succeeding, aka the red states. That's what I think is going to. And then the red states are going to say, no, I don't think so. And then I don't know what we have on our hands at that point. We've either got some sort of secession. So I don't know what we have at that point. We have a fracturing of the states.
I mean, I agree with you in the respect that the Reds party does not have power in America. They've been on a downhill slide for basically since FDR, right? Everything has been more centralized. Everything has been more in the Democratic vision, with the exceptions to that are like Reagan and Trump and maybe a little bit of Bush, where like things slowed down moving in that direction, but it's still moving in that direction, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's always that same fundamental direction. I mean, I think in the near term, there's like no political vision for the red side. And the younger generation, our generation, probably the one ahead of us and below us, their first instinct, as we've talked about before, something is wrong. Well, the government should step in and solve it. And so somehow that, which continues to accelerate, has to break somehow. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it could break in the extreme Atlas Shrugged way of just all the infrastructure falling apart.
Dude, it could break
politically, where like they just lose, like that viewpoint eventually loses, or they could succeed and we all die.
We know that's not happening. Dude, I think our infrastructure is already falling apart. I think we're witnessing the Atlas Shrugged scene where, you know, the train track lights go out and they're holding up torches and lanterns to signal which tracks are clear and where the trains can go, because no one knows how to fix the electrical system.
But normally they give the wrong signal because they're mostly looking on their phones.
No, the signal's automated. No one has to do it except for the dude who programmed it, you know, 40 years ago.
Right.
It was all automated because one dude knew how to do it. But then no one knows how to do it anymore because no one's done it. And you see things slowly start to fall apart in Atlas Shrugged. And dude, I think that's where we're going to be at in our world. Maybe it won't be that bad. But I see these videos of, you know, airplane doors coming undone and the roofs flying open and all these different malfunctions on equipment. I don't know if we're actually doing maintenance on airplanes and stuff, or if we just are checking boxes so that we can say we've done maintenance so that no one's liable when something wrong happens. And what we've seen so far is, okay, a door flew open, you know, well, you know, that's okay. No one got hurt. They landed the plane and it's okay. Some people were a little startled. I mean, that's fine. Those are the first failures we're seeing. You know, I'm not convinced anyone's doing any work. And so, yeah, I think when we talk about maintenance, we're going to see airplanes continue to fail. And it's just going to be a game of, well, you know, it's been working for 60 years. It still works until it doesn't. And so we'll just use the tech until it doesn't work anymore. And then we're back at square one where it's like, well, how do we travel now? Well, now you have to drive. Well, now you have to get a horse and carriage. All right. I don't think we're going to the horse and carriage. Cars are pretty...
Ironically, the horses take like more effort and know-how to operate than the vehicle. So,
right. Cars, we've done a great job with cars, dude. I think they're pretty simple overall. I guess airplanes aren't extremely... I don't know how complicated. I don't think they're too complicated.
You don't think airplanes are too complicated?
Compared to a car, they're a lot more complicated. I'll tell you, I think a helicopter is far more complicated than an airplane. You talk about what equipment's going down first? Helicopters, dude. Helicopters are going down.
All right, dude, let's talk about trains and construction equipment. This has become the autism podcast.
Anyways, all that to say, dude, I don't know if we're headed in a great direction. And I want to think that Bitcoin fixes everything. I don't know how fast it fixes it. And I'm a little concerned that we've lost a lot of knowledge and a lot of information because it's been converted and reconverted 7,000 times into meaningless checklists. And so no one actually understands the reason the checklist was made or the reason that a manual was written, guidelines for production, whatever it is. No one understands the reasoning behind it. All they can do is look at the words and say, well, this is what it says.
Yeah. And what does the owner's manual say?
Right. And that's a problem. When you don't understand like the intent behind it or what you're actually trying to accomplish or do, you only understand that it is directions or instructions. You've lost the knowledge.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know how long it takes us to get it back, but I think we've lost a lot of knowledge, actually.
You know what the Coastal's solution for this is, right?
When you say Coastal's, do you mean Californians? What are we talking
about? The people on both coasts.
Okay, gotcha.
So I guess let's just call it San Francisco / Washington, D.C., Axis of Evil. You know what their solution for this is?
That's much clearer, dude. What's their solution?
AI. It's like you already have the guy that made the switches to operate the trains, right? And they know as much as the most libertarian Bitcoiner. Everybody sees things falling apart, right? We see the Atlas Shrugged type scenario that we're in. And the San Francisco DC solution to this is not to like reevaluate the foundation, but to charge as hard as possible into an arms race of making artificial intelligence smarter than the people, right? Replacing essentially people with almost a certain guarantee that we'll create something beyond our control. Even without that risk, and just talking about this belief that, oh, we could just automate all human positions in 5 years, in 10 years. Pretty insane.
Yeah, dude, I think AI, I'm going to quote Hal Finney here, dude. What he said about the internet and or computers or both. He said it's a tool that can be, I'm paraphrasing here, it's a tool that can be used to essentially enslave human beings or to empower us and give us more autonomy and freedom. Something along those lines.
Liberate them. Yeah.
Yeah. Liberate. That's another good synonym. And I think the same could be said of AI. I would put it in the same category. I think his statement applies to it. So I don't know. I mean, it depends how it's implemented. I think there's always going to be the Satoshis out there. Maybe he's one of a kind. Someone else like him will come along eventually. And I don't know if AI, I don't know what'll happen with it. But I consider AI to be very similar to internet, very similar to computers where, yeah, okay, you could sit here and be cynical and say, well, all we do is stare at our phones or TVs and tech all day, and we can't do anything without the internet. We're slaves to it. Or we've got social media and we've lost the ability to interact with each other, things like that. That's all true, but there's a lot of positive benefits that have come from it as well. There are positive things that are built with it and on it.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to make AI into a boogeyman. I believe in it too, as I think if you believe in automation, you should believe in AI. But it is funny just viewing it as one regime is losing power, one regime is slowly gaining this grassroots power. The regime that's currently in power and wants to freeze everything, of course you're going to try to create AI, right? Like to generate AI, you have basically your own automatons, your own AI workforce, your own drones.
Yeah.
It's Senator Palpatine creating a clone army in the darkness as he knows he'll need it for the next step, right?
Dude, that's a perfect example. And we think AI is here to help us and save us. And so we say, wow, good thing Master Sifo-Dyas created this clone army for us to use. And it's got, you know, 70 million clone soldiers.
Yeah. Thank God we got rid of all those, you know, wise warriors that thought for themselves and, you know, were autonomous and could make their own judgment calls. And instead we replaced them with a galactic fighting army that answers to one person. That's what we're doing.
Dude, someone needs to name their evil kid Palpatine so we just know who he is.
Dude, I'm pretty sure Musk has a kid named Palpatine.
No, he does not.
Okay, never mind. It was Bezos. And it was his girlfriend's name.
Shut up, dude. And so we both think it's revolution. That's our answer.
Revolution until someone submits, dude. And everybody submits to Bitcoin at some point.
I'm ready for the revolution, man. That's what I'm here for.
The peaceful revolution. Me too.
The peaceful revolution to liberate all of mankind. All right, deuces.
Peace.